You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. Today I'm going to do something a little different. I'm going to kind of go off a plan, but I was asked by one of my lifters who's also a coach, Dave, if I could go over how I do this whole process of writing programs for people, like from intake on up. And I thought it actually might be a good topic for a podcast. So I'm going to start with somebody sending me an email or coming into the gym or asking me about getting coaching. So number one, I always want to make sure it's going to be a good fit. So philosophically, I think I differ from some coaches, or even a lot of coaches for that matter. And it's not necessarily always a good fit with somebody who walks into the gym. So philosophically, I have more of a long-term plan in mind when an athlete comes in and wants to get training with me. So there are plenty of ways that you can get stronger faster than the program that I'm going to give them. However, I'm going to take into consideration their training age, their body weight, their height, like where that fits on a chart, their current total, where their lifts are, how long they've been lifting, all that stuff's going to kind of go into this. And I'm going to determine the best plan to get them the best total over the course of the long term. So in a lot of cases, I might get a lifter that has a very good total, even a national level total, but they've only been lifting for a short amount of time, that I may decide that we're going to take a step backwards with their lifts so that we can take multiple steps forward later on down the road. Not all coaches will do this. Some coaches will see their total and they'll just load it, and it is what it is, and they'll progress on programs like that. It's just not how I work. So like, for example, I think this is an extremely common one, is I tend to get a lot of strong pullers with very rounded backs. And, you know, you do get some ego thrown in here at times too. I mean, you know, let's be honest, everybody who does this sport, this includes myself, has an ego. It's how we approach it. It's how we approach the bar and we put effort into it. But in a lot of these cases, you know, they're really limited. Their ceiling is very limited if they don't make some improvements in their deadlift. For example, I have a new lifter, Emily, who just started with me, who's a big fan of the podcast, so I know she'll hear this at some point, who at 72 kilograms, she has a 350-pound deadlift. This is a pretty strong deadlift. Her training age is a year, but it's very round. Her back's very round. She pulls sumo. It's very round. And in this conversation that I was discussing, is Kerry at the other end has been training a little bit longer, has a 350-pound deadlift at the 52-kilogram weight class, so it's a much more elite deadlift for that weight class. How I'm going to attack both of their deadlifts is going to be very different. So with Emily, where she's only been training a year, I'm willing to take a big step backwards to, you know, flatten out her back a little bit, get her to use way more legs off the floor and really drill that technique, because she is a beginner. But Kerry, on the other hand, who is an elite lifter, her gym total puts her well into the top 20 in her weight class. And as we're trying to climb those rankings, I'm not willing to take a step back with Kerry. We need to find some middle ground and still improve. They both have rounded backs, if I didn't say that before. So with Kerry, I still want to improve that leg strength off the floor, but I'm not willing to take a step back to do that. So we'll do some stuff that allows her to get a little bit stronger in her legs, but at the end of the day, you know, she's still going to be round in the deadlift, and I think we're both okay with that. Kerry, with a longer training age too, because she's been training over this period of time, just those years build resiliency if it's done appropriately. So I monitor everybody's volumes in a way that allows me to increase it steadily over time. It's not like week to week, we're just constantly increasing it. So we'll improve upon baseline, maintain baseline for a while, improve upon baseline. There's a yearly plan with every lifter for these things. So she's, you know, built it up pretty good. So the difference of lifter there based off of training age, and where they fall in their weight class is going to determine kind of where we're going to take training. So that's kind of like an initial assessment. And, you know, the lifter needs to be okay with that, because there are coaches that would just allow her to continue with a rounded back and just continually load it, like, you know, some type of program that linear periodization, that's just adding weight to the bar each week or whatever. And like, if there's enough effort, so, you know, I've mentioned this in a lot of articles and other podcasts that like my goal is to build a strong foundation with all of the lifters. So we want that technique with the lifts to be consistent and the same every single time. This builds a stable movement pattern. So if we can build that stable movement pattern, we can stress it more because it's strong. It's hard to break down. But if our technique sucks and we're just kind of all over the place with every rep, we're building an unstable movement pattern. And the way we have to get stronger in those situations is the training stimulus needs to be much higher. So, you know, if a lifter with a rounded back in this scenario went and did a program that the training stimulus was very high, their total is going to go up quite a bit. And they're not going to have to take that step back. But my argument would be for long-term health of that lifter, and also long-term totals. I think somebody taking a step back is obviously going to have a much higher ceiling over the long run than somebody who is very rounded and just kind of going after it there. You know, and this, like I said, between Carrie and Emily, it depends on the lifter, but we're still going to try to make some improvements on there. So explaining that and making sure that the lifter is kind of okay with a longer term plan, step number one. And then on top of that, like, I know the assessments and all this stuff is a big craze in the fitness industry. There's all kinds of them out there. The only assessment I want to see, I just want to see what their lifts look like. I want, you know, I'll have them come into the gym. We'll squat, we'll bench, we'll deadlift. We'll keep it pretty light, you know, depending on the lifter, their training age, what I've seen from videos, if they've sent me some, somewhere between like 60 and 75%. Maybe for triples, just to kind of get a baseline of where their technique is. I can see it in person. And then I can come up with the appropriate game plan to follow. So in the, you know, in these situations here, you know, I'm kind of making notes on which areas need the most work. So I take the lifts and I break them down into parts. So we have the unrack, the walkout, the first half of the eccentric, the second half of the eccentric, the transition period, and the lockout for the squat. The transition period, and then obviously the concentric motion, then the lockout for the squat. For the bench, you know, we have the setup, the unrack, the eccentric, where it touches the chest, how it touches the chest. You know, we're looking at the positions of the elbows and all that stuff. The concentric, the lockout. And then for the deadlift, obviously there's no eccentric position, but the setup, the first half of the lift. So as it breaks the floor, what the position of the lifter looks like at the knees, what it looks like above the knees, because you'd actually be surprised on that transition how often lifters look good at the floor. But then once it breaks the floor, they try to accelerate the bar, and they do so by extending their knees much faster than the torso. And then the lockout of the lift. So I look at those, and then I pick, you know, where the breakdown's happening, what I believe will help fix that the biggest breakdown. You know, sometimes there's multiple things going on, and we'll pick one priority, and that'll be the priority that I want to work on. I don't do, so here's a controversial truth by Kevin Kahn. I don't do any assessments for mobility. I don't give a shit what anybody coming into the gym, how far they can lift their leg up while they're lying on the ground. The law of specificity applies to all of this stuff. So I don't care what your bird dog looks like. It's not telling me anything about your weighted squat and where our training weights are going to be. I need to see what you actually look like with a bar on your back. It's not hip mobility. It's not any of that stuff that's negatively affecting your squat depth. It's your skill level within the lift. It's your ego putting too much weight on the bar. There's some issue there. So in the last couple of years that I've been basically primarily coaching only competitive powerlifters, we don't do any special warm-ups. We don't foam roll. Our warm-up literally consists of taking the empty bar for 3 or 4 sets of 10, maybe one other jump before 50% for a set or 2 of 5, and then we get into, I write out every repetition from 50% and up, because a Russian study showed that that's where fatigue begins to accumulate on the lifter, and anything less than that doesn't really enhance hypertrophy or strength gains within lifters. So I don't do any assessments for that stuff. The only assessment I do is on the actual weighted lifts themselves. There will be times, like during this, we'll call it an assessment process, when I'm watching somebody squat where their technique looks really good. So I might load it a little bit more or add some more reps or do something where I can fatigue them in some way or make it heavier so I can try to see if it's going to break down under heavier weights and kind of figure out where that's going to lie. Once I determine which positions of the lift I want to increase, I kind of have an idea of what exercises I want to fix. I kind of have an idea of what exercises I'm going to throw in their place. So I analyze their last month of training. So if you've paid attention to the podcast and articles I write, I use the acute chronic work ratio. So this is a 28-day rolling average of weekly volumes. So I tend to throw out all their accessory work and only look at the competition lifts for this and the weights that they've used, because you never really know what somebody's using on accessory stuff. And it doesn't, you know, necessarily fit the same standards. So I'll look at their competition lifts. I'll figure out what their 28-day weekly average of volume is, and that's kind of a starting point for our weekly average of volumes. So I'll look at that starting point and I'll compare it to the recommended volumes that Boris Shiko has laid out. I lay them out in my book. They're also on his website. And I compare that level of lifter. So there's a Russian classification chart that puts lifters into specific categories based off of their total and their body weight. And this is based off of other lifters. So the Russian classification chart is for equipped lifters, but it works very well for determining volumes with raw lifters. I've had very good success with it. So I'll figure out where their volume is compared to the recommended volumes on that chart for their classification. So if there's a big gap between their volume now and where it needs to be, that's priority number one for me, is building work capacity. Because based off of the research for the acute chronic work ratio, if our volumes are too little, we can still increase injury risk as much as if they were too high. So with that, you know, I don't just want to start them at those recommended volumes if their volumes have been much lower. And you'll be surprised, a lot of programs out there are much lower volume than what you think they are. The majority of their volume comes from accessory work, which tends to not be loaded the same way as the competition lifts themselves. So they're not prepared to handle a lot of volume within the competition lifts themselves. I do fall into the group that believes the majority of our volume should come from those lifts and their variations. So that'll be plan number one, is to build that work capacity, which builds resiliency in the lifter while we work on correcting specific skills within the lift. So for a beginner, a more beginner to intermediate there, and remember, when I'm talking about average relative intensities, every repetition from 50% up is recorded in these. So a beginner will probably be within 65 to 67% of one rep max as their average relative intensity. An intermediate, we're going to be somewhere between 68 and 72%. Intermediate to elite, even some of the elite ones are still going to fall within that 68 to 72% window. It just tends to be a little bit higher. So they might be 70 to 72, where a beginner intermediate might be 68 to 70. or whatnot. Now, each lift I give a rating to as well. So it's, you know, some lifters come in, they have very good looking squats, but the deadlift needs work, or the bench needs work, or you know, some type of combination of those factors. So it might be the squat average relative intensity might be 65 to 67% because their technique's very bad, but their deadlift technique's really good. So we might drive intensity up into that 68 to 72% percentile. And this is kind of just based off of my observations and where those lifts would kind of fall within the national rankings here in the USAPL. You know, I have lifters with elite pulls, but not elite totals. So, you know, each lift kind of gets their own category and rating within that entire system itself. So once I determine kind of the groundwork for that, so I know where we're going to start for volumes, I've analyzed their lifts, I know where we're going to start for average relative intensities, I've analyzed their lifts, so I know what technique breakdowns and what variations I'm going to utilize. I have everything kind of ready to go. So then when I break everything down and I put it onto paper, I want, and now it's not necessarily going to always fall this way, but within a block it tends to meet these standards pretty well, especially away from competition. We might see this kind of change as we get closer to competition. So I want about 20% of the total volume to come from competition lifts, 60% of the total volume to come from some type of variation that's going to work on enhancing their technique or their strength within the lift. And then the other 20% comes from what we'll call like GPP, like specific accessory work for, it's basically like bodybuilding for the muscles involved in the power lifts. So now we can start to lay out the block. So in this scenario here, in most cases, when I'm programming every single, you know, week to week, and I do 4 week blocks, every week I'm going to look for one or two days that are going to be above the lifter's baseline, one or two days that are at baseline, and one day in there for recovery. So those one or two days above baseline are what stresses the lifter to adapt and get stronger. The 1 to 2 days at baseline is what allows us to maintain what we've built, and then we get a lighter day in there for recovery. So I don't tend to deload or set up programs like a lot of typical programs where you might, you know, set up week one, increase it week two, increase it week three, and then deload week four. That's not necessarily what I'm looking for, and I'm not too sure how well that plays out over the longer term. You can't just keep adding weight to the bar every single week without seeing some type of drawback at some point. So I kind of view it from block to block in that scenario. And if I want it to be a lighter week, we just might have 3 medium days and a lighter day in there. But it's all going to be based off of their acute chronic work ratio. So the acute chronic work ratio, again, it's a rolling 28-day average, but the acute part is this week's volume. So if this week's volume is identical to that 28-day average, we get a ratio of 1.0. That's baseline. That is an average week. That lifter should be able to recover from that, no problem. So with this ratio, so when we're writing a program, I don't like to get away from baseline for a long period of time, whether it's over baseline or whether it's under baseline. So this ratio kind of keeps it in check. Okay, so we run a ratio of 0.80 to 1.30, anything in between there. So we'll get above baseline at times. We'll also get below baseline at times, but we never stray too far at any given point in time. The only time this differs is when we're tapering for a meet. That's the time that we'll really drop it off. So a lighter week for a lifter will just be a shade under baseline. So their volumes and the intensity might even come up on those weeks. Like it depends, but it's typically their volume drops to, you know, anywhere between 0.8, 0.9, somewhere in that ballpark. And their higher weeks, 1.2, 1.3, we don't really stray too far. We'll get above there, but it's not very It's not very far, and at the end of the block, it'll average out to be about baseline. So this is how we can kind of gradually drive up baseline over time. So we're increasing volume, but we're doing it safely, and we're taking time to do so. So if we get a lifter and their volume needs to come up, or even if we get a lifter who's qualified for a national level event and it's far out, what we can do is we can start to really drive that baseline up. So each block, I'll look to have a baseline that's a little bit higher than the previous block. You know, maybe 10% more if I'm going to throw a number on it. Again, this depends on the lifter and what I'm actually looking at. So what we'll do is we'll continue to drive up volumes till we're going to enter what we'll call like a meet prep block. Depending on the lifter, maybe this is 12 weeks out, right? So 12 weeks out, then we really start to ramp it up. So that's where we start to really pay attention to last set RPEs, driving weights higher. You know, we'll say we're putting the gas pedal down for that period of time. So that way we're driving those volumes up as high as we can, then we let them taper down and we peak for the meet. That's kind of what, in a very broad scale, what the bigger picture is going to look like. And far away from a meet too. So like I said, so what we want to do is we want to pick one area of each lift and focus on it. So let's take that rounded back deadlift because I brought it up earlier. So if we're rounded off the floor, the lifter needs to improve leg strength in that position. So we want to fix that bottom position of the lift. So I'm going to pick, and there's a number of ways to do this, and it depends on the lifter and kind of what I'm trying to do. So to build that strength from the floor, we could do deficits, we could do pauses right off the floor, we could do tempo deadlifts to the knees, especially for the rounded back. I really like these ones, the deadlift plus deadlift below the knee. So the lifter will lock it out from the floor and they bring it down as low as they can without touching the floor. So holding onto that weight and controlling that eccentric forces them to resist that flexion of the back that they want to get. So it really helps, that eccentric portion really helps to build up that back. So we'll start with volume and we'll start to like push those lifts over time. I like using accommodating resistance here, especially bands if they're rounding the back, because of the same thing, that band tension pulling down on the bar, they need to resist that flexion of the back. So it kind of teaches them to stay tight and drive throughout the lift. I'm not talking a ton of accommodating resistance here, but we use the thin red bands from Elite FTS. It's not adding a ton of tension for me, a 5'11 male. It's adding about 40 pounds total between the two bands at the top. But it's enough to really drive technique. We keep weights lighter on this and kind of drive more volume with that lift there. Like I said, we said deficits, tempos. If this person pulls sumo and there tends to probably be a big gap in their conventional, because that rounded back can be a number of things. It could be weak hips, so just not strong enough legs off the floor. It could also be weak erectors, because that moment arm is longest at the ground for our erectors, and as that bar comes up our body, that moment arm shortens and allows us to re-extend the spine. So we're going to do stuff like good mornings, seated good mornings, and really build up the back as well. But perhaps some conventional deadlift, some medium stance sumo deadlift, something that puts them at a torso angle that's a little bit more over the bar. And that's if they pull sumo, of course. If they pull conventional and they're very round, all of the same exercises still apply, except I'll add in a lot of like snatch grip RDLs with very slow lowering. And one thing that we're starting to institute now, I've done slow eccentric deadlifts for the conventional pullers, where they just literally will be programmed in there 3 seconds from lockout back down to the ground, just to constantly build that back and work on a better start position. We're starting to do those with every deadlift, no matter what. So the lifters need to control it down in the ground and pretend that, you know, the floor is made of glass and they can't break the glass. So that's one of the newer things that we're throwing in there. So I'll pick an exercise, or I'll pick a few exercises. So it might be the first week, right? Because the volume will be probably kind of low. So we might do some, and I might not even do some competition deadlifts right now. I might take them out if we're far away from a meet or they're a beginner, just to kind of really work on technique. And the thing with the variations is they drive up effort a little bit. So you can use less weight but still get quality effort. So for example, on day two, which would be our first deadlift day, they might do like just deadlift to the knees plus full deadlift. So they're just focusing on that start position. So say this is a 2+1 or 2+2 at 70-75%. So they do the two reps up to the knees and back down to the ground. So to the knees, back down to the ground, to the knees, back down to the ground, and then they'll do their two full deadlifts. So that first half of that set, they can really concentrate on that starting position, knowing that they have to stop at the knees. It kind of slows them down a little bit, so they get to feel those positions a little bit more. And then we add that hopefully, even if it's just a little tiny bit of improvement, hopefully we add that into their full deadlift. And the weights are light enough where, in most cases, lifters can control their position. So even if I make them flatten out their back and it feels really hard in that position, at 70-75%, they're able to maintain it and kind of get through it. So then day four would be our second deadlift day. So on that second deadlift day, we might do deficit deadlifts. This might be 70% for some doubles. So even though it's 70%, it's harder from a deficit, obviously, because the range of motion is greater. Now, our deficits are a little bit different than the majority of people. So this is how deficits were used with me, with Chico as my coach, and I use them with other lifters. It's a technique builder, not necessarily a strength builder. Even though it's going to build strength from the bottom, if you view it as a technique builder, it makes more sense. So we use deficits of 8 to 10 centimeters, which is like 3 or 4 inches, which is pretty big. So what this does is it puts the lifter in a position that's very difficult for them to try to get into a good start position. They already struggle from the floor to get into a good start position. So this kind of helps them fight really hard. So there will be some rounding on this, and I'm okay with that, because the second we remove the deficit and they try to fight to get into that position there, it helps clear up that start position a lot greater than you think. And then on top of that, because it's 8 to 10 centimeters, you get more knee flexion and more hip flexion. So it requires them to use a lot more legs. So you drill this enough and you can really start to reinforce the legs off the ground in a better starting position. So then week one, so that's pretty low deadlift volume for week one. So I might want to push that a little bit on week two. So the way that I tend to do this, pushing volume, is we'll do a double deadlift day on day two of week two. So when we do these double deadlift days, so these are pretty like famous Chico setups. So we'll deadlift, we'll bench, then we'll go back to deadlifts. So the first part will just work on the bottom portion of the lift itself. So I could decide to throw deficits back in here, but deficits are pretty tough, even at 70%. So I don't tend to like to do that this early in a block and this early coaching somebody. So I might just do deadlifts just to the knee. So we'll just do that partial range of motion lift, so it allows the lifter just to concentrate on that. We might work up to 70% for triples, 75% for doubles, nothing crazy. And then we'll go bench, and then we'll go back to deadlifts, and then we'll work on the second half of the lift. So here we might do deadlift off blocks. So we'll feel something a little bit heavier, but raising the bar up tends to help the lifter get into a better position. So this is usually the same. So anywhere between like 5 and 10 centimeters we use for blocks. And then from here, you know, we might do two triples at 80, three doubles at 85, maybe 90%. Kind of depends on what it looks like in the lifter themselves. I might use two triples at 80, three doubles at 85, and add in some accommodating resistance. Here I would use chains, not bands, just to help strengthen that back. So as that moment arm gets shorter and it becomes easier and easier on the back, the tension becomes harder and harder for the back. So you can kind of help build it in that manner. Now on day four, so depending on how much volume, so say I did four doubles at 75, which would be 8 lifts there, plus all the warm-ups. We have another 6, so there's 14. And then if I do 2 triples and 3 doubles, we're up to 30 lifts plus the other warm-ups. So, you know, you're talking anywhere between 36 and 40 lifts I've done on this day, which is going to be above baseline for that lifter. So the next deadlift day, I want to be around baseline. So I should back up because I actually think I forgot to explain how I get the number of lifts for baselines. So let's say for simple math, let's say we're going to do 1,000 lifts in this month is kind of going to be our goal, and we train 4 days a week. I would take that 1,000 lifts and divide it by 16, which is the number of training days in that 28-day period, that 4-week period. So that's going to be 62.5 lifts on a given day. So then we can further break it down. So about half of my lifts are going to be bench, and the other half are going to be squats and deadlifts. So I know if I'm going to bench on that day and I want a medium load bench day, medium load lower body day, we'll call it the squat or deadlift, you know, it's going to be about 30 lifts for each one of them. So, you know, for simple math, if we take that 1,000, right, so roughly anywhere between 400 and 500 are going to be bench press reps, and then the rest are going to come from squats and deadlifts. And you would just divide by that percentage just to kind of figure out where you're going to fall within that range. So for that lifter, let's say a baseline deadlift day is about 30 lifts and we're getting about 40 on that day. So I want one that's going to be at baseline or a little bit lower on that day 4. And if you look at the typical structure of the program too, day 4 tends to be a lighter recovery day, which is that second deadlift day, just because the deadlift's a little bit harder to recover from. So if I wanted to make week 2 a higher volume week that kind of stresses baseline into that 1.2 range, I would probably add in deadlift with bands here. So we would take 70% for a 4x4, 5x4, something like that. So it's not enough bar weight to really crush the lifter. The band tension is kind of bonus volume here, but it's a lot of tonnage at the end of the day, especially if you're adding, you know, squats and bench and everything else into it. It's a nice way to drive volume. If I drove squat volume pretty high on day 1, then that deadlift day on day 2 was high volume like that, then I might use deficits again in this position here, where it's lighter bar weight, we can drive that effort a little bit. And if I wanted something in the middle, depending on what I did the rest of the week, here's where I might add in that full deadlift plus deadlift below the knees at 70-75%. To really like strengthen the back, where you pick it up, you lock it out, you bring it as low as you can without touching the floor, and then you lock it out a couple more times. So it kind of depends on the structure of the workout there, but we have options. So let's say for this lifter, I decide to do the full deadlift plus deadlift below the knees there. We do 5 times 1 plus 2 at 75%. So this week is going to be a pretty tough week, you know, where we had a double deadlift day. Chances are I drove squats on a day 2. Okay, so coming back week 3, I might want to decrease the volume a little bit. So here's where on day 2 for that deadlift, I might add in the deadlift with bands. This would definitely be a 4x4 at 70%. So when you're looking at total lifts there, so we have 4 at 50, 4 at 60, and then 16 at 70%. So that's 24 total lifts, far fewer than the 36 to 40 lifts that we did on day 2 the week before. You know, and it's still a little under baseline. The average relative intensity is going to be much lower too, because we're only using 70% bar weight, even though the band tension and the deadlift with bands kind of sucks. It's kind of hard, especially at those volumes. So then I could come back and we could do the full deadlift plus deadlift below the knees again, except, you know, we could change up the rep scheme a little bit if we wanted to, maybe add a set to it. So if this is something I really wanted to like keep in and really kind of push over a period of time till they figured it out, we could do 6 sets at 75% for 6 times 1 plus 2, which would just be adding a set from the week before. And our overall deadlift volume for the week would still be less. If I wanted to make this a light week, I again could throw the deficits in there, but chances are this would be either I'd keep the five sets or increase a set of the deadlift plus deadlift below the knees here. And then the following week, so now we're on to week three, that day two, I know because I took a little lesser of a deadlift week last week, and especially where that deadlift plus deadlift below the knees has been in there a couple weeks, it's starting to be a little easier for the lifter. On day two this week, I'm going to add in deficits as that first exercise, so the one that's going to work on that bottom portion of the lift, and we'll repeat that 70% for the four times two. Four sets of two. Their back should be getting stronger with all the deadlift work that we've been doing. They're more than capable of handling this here. And then we'll come back to the same blocks that we did before. So when we did the deadlift, two knees, and then we came back to the blocks, I'll usually keep the same exact deadlift block variation that we did there. And then here, I might want to see what the competition deadlift is looking like. I want something to show me that this is actually improving. So I'll throw some comp deadlifts in on day four. And this might be 80% for some doubles. Nothing crazy, something that they can handle, but they're feeling a little bit of weight. I want to know what this looks like. So we might do four or five doubles at 80% on day four. And then when we come back the following week, you know, on day two, I might add a set to the deadlift with bands. So this might be 70% five sets of four deadlift with bands there, and we'll double bench around that like we would have done before. And then on day four, we got some options here. I might decide to comp deadlift again, maybe adding a set to the week before. Or I might do deadlift plus deadlift below the knees, or deadlift to the knees plus full deadlift, one of those two again. Something that still drills that start position and is still getting some volume, and we're touching 75%. So deadlift plus deadlift to the knees, or deadlift to the knees plus full deadlift at least 75%. If I decided to drive that variation a little bit, we might touch 80% here for four sets of a 1+1 or something, just so they can feel that heavier weight, and especially if I feel it's been improving over that period of time, so we get some options. But that's kind of like how the structure of a block goes with an exercise. And then hopefully in the next block, the starting position is starting to clear up, and we'll just start either increasing volume there or intensity. And then hopefully, you know, let's take this, let's say at the last day four of week four of that block, we did doubles at 80% of the comp deadlift, and it looks freaking great. So I usually write programs a week ahead of time, which is why I would have done it week three, just to see what it looks like. And that's gonna tell me what I need to do in the next block, if I need to keep doing the same stuff or improving upon the same stuff by intensities, volumes, whatever. Let's say those doubles at 80% on the deadlift look a lot better. We'll start adding in more competition style deadlifts there. So now that that's getting better, we can start driving doubles and triples at 80% of the competition deadlifts. And I might decide to add something that's going to really build their back. So if this is a sumo puller, this is where conventional deadlifts might come in. If it's a conventional puller and they still need to work on some leg strength off the floor, this is where sumo deadlifts might come in. So they'll still hit their competition lifts, but now we might do a variation using that opposite stance deadlift, which in these scenarios, there tends to be a big gap. And if there is a big gap, we'll drive that variation until that gap gets closed. At that point, we'll be closer to the meet. And then from there, you know, we'll test and peak and taper. And I'll keep the other stuff in there. So in that next block, there'll still be, so if, let's say week one, I have two deadlift slots I'm going to use. Week two, I have three deadlift slots I'm going to use. Week three, I have two. Week four, I have three. So let's say we just go back and forth like that. I'm always going to have a slot for a technique deadlift in there at least once every 2 weeks. So, because I don't want to get too far away from what we've built. So it tends to be on day four, and maybe every other week I have some type of bottom position deadlift variation in there. So let's say week one, day four, deadlift to knees plus full deadlift. Week two, that day four might be the conventional deadlift, and then I'm doing some type of deadlift to the knees as that first deadlift slot on day two, and then that third slot after bench on day two might be some other deadlift variation, right? Where it might be comp deadlifts, it might be deadlift off blocks, it might be something like that. But we're going to load it, we're going to build strength in the lift there. Then week three, day four might be that technique thing again. And then week five, you know, same thing, you know, might be conventional on day four. And then I'm going to drive some type of technique thing in spot one. Of course, there's all kinds of scenarios that can fit here. Maybe I just do technique stuff because it's cleared up so much and it's starting to look a lot better. Maybe I do it once every other week. And then that starts to go away a little bit more and we start doing more competition lifts, and the variations begin to vary a little bit more to build up those weak spots. So once I want every lifter to have good technique, and then we'll find those weaknesses to drive up that strength. So once we've laid that foundation of technique, that's where the alternate stance deadlifts or whatever it may be will come in to fix that stuff. And then, you know, we'll peak, and depending on the lifter, the peak and block tends to be a little bit different. And then we'll test and taper. And hopefully, like, the technique stuff starts to clear up before meet. You know, hopefully we get 6 weeks where we can start to, like, back off on some of the technique work, except we'll use technique stuff as those recovery days. And we can start driving the intensity of the competition lift up. In some cases, like especially for beginners, I don't care that much. I mean, of course, I care about their first meet, but I don't, you know, or second meet or third meet. But I don't care, you know, I care about seeing progress, whether it's in technique, it might be in strength gains, it might be in whatever. So sometimes we might only touch 90% once. And then we'll have a lighter week, and then we'll test and then touch it again, you know, so I'll kind of use the meet itself as a means of training heavy weights. And we'll just kind of hit what looks good that day and we'll advance from there. So like, you don't always have to PR on the platform. Sometimes I'm looking for progress on technique. Sometimes I'm looking for them just to gain experience competing in front of the judges and working on nerves and increasing their skill as a competitor, because I do believe that that's a big skill. And then, you know, other times as the lifter starts to progress in training and their total starts to increase over time and they start working their way up through those classifications, then it becomes a little bit different. Then we'll start touching, you know, for some lifters, we'll start touching 90% more frequently. We'll start pushing training volumes in a lot different scenarios. Like, they'll touch reps over 80%. A lot more of their volume will come from those repetitions at that time, once their technique is really settled in, than it did previously. So, you know, we talked about effort. So once their technique is good enough, I get the effort from the competition lifts and driving the intensities on the bar on those lifts. But if their technique needs improvement, we can get that same effort from doing those variations that are going to help increase their technique. And, you know, it's a continual process over time, because there is a point getting close to a meet, if it's an important meet, that technique is kind of what it is, and we just start loading it up and really maximizing what we have at that current point in time. And then after that big competition, we can analyze everything and decide what the next best move is going to be, because in a lot of cases, once you qualify for nationals, you know, the Arnold's a show meet, you know, and some people still want to do really well at it, but, you know, at the end of the day, nationals is the one that you really want to do well at, and you get a whole year in between each nationals. So at times right after, it might be good to take a step back, really work on something. I think adding in a lot of like big variations with the more elite lifters helps kind of identify some weaknesses too. Like if their high bar squat is really far behind their comp squat, it's something, you know, we'll spend some time and we'll really drive up those volumes and intensities to close that gap. And I think, you know, we're always searching for those weaknesses. Might be a different grip on a bench, might be a legless bench. You know, it might be a one board or two board. Like we'll figure out all of those things. And I've covered the deadlift pretty good. you know, and it's like I said, it's a continual process of analyzing, assessing, and coming up with a game plan. And once you write that plan, it doesn't necessarily mean that it needs to stay that way. So I've added in a lot of subjective monitoring with my lifters. So they come in and they let me know how they feel on a given day. And based off of their skill level, how long they've been with me and stuff like that. And as long as the exercise, as long as they've done it before, they've recorded a last set RPE of 8 or less, it feels good. There's auto-regulation in it that they can use. So they have intervals that they can increase it. So, you know, if it's 80% for triples, they can go up to 85% if they want for those triples. And they can keep that 85% on that bar for the next 3 or 4 weeks before they're allowed to actually progress it. So this allows us to safely build volumes over time. And what you tend to see is, especially with 1 to 2 reps left in reserve, if they work up that heavy, is you do start to see some technique breakdowns, especially on the later sets and later reps. So over that 4 week period, you should start to see those technique breakdowns slowly go away, and you should start to see the speed of those triples start to increase, and then we can drive it up again if necessary, or pick a different lift, or, you know, oftentimes in those cases there, I won't drive up the competition lift. I'll find a variation that's weak. We'll keep the competition lift in there, and then we'll drive that weak variation. So, you know, there's ways that we can manipulate that weight to make it more difficult. So in that case, if those triples are flying, but the volumes are good, and there's, let's say, high bar squats are really weak, we can put those high bar squats first, bench, and then come back to those heavy triples on the squat to make it more difficult. We can do a high volume squat day one, something that really stresses base on, like a pyramid, or what a few of the more elite lifters are about to experience, are the extra large pyramids that are coming in their next one. And then they'll deadlift day two, and then those heavy triples on day three, once that fatigue accumulation from the week starts to like really creep in, it can make those triples harder. We can bench before we do them. Like, there's a number of ways that we can make those triples harder while driving up a weakness that we find within the lift. And again, if it's a technique weakness, we'll drive, typically we're not going to drive the competition lift like that. We'll drive a variation that has the same stance, same bar placement, all the same stuff. Until that starts looking better, then we'll add in the compost, kind of like what I explained with the deadlift earlier. So I think this is a good first start in what I do with the programming. I know I was rambling on, like I wasn't going from a sheet of paper. But it's kind of, I think it's a good start, and it can at least bring up some questions that people have. And if people have questions, I'll do a second one. It's a nice way to drive content. I'm glad Dave brought this up. And me and him are going to talk a little bit more about this. And after he listens to it first, there'll probably be some more questions that I can answer. And, you know, we'll get that out there. All right. But for now, stay strong, Boston.